Log Talk Radio.
It's the podcast version of getting salt thrown in your eyes. Live on the shores of Lake Washington, or as close as I can afford in my tax bracket, it's Saturday Morning Wrestling with Jim Valley, and thank you for joining us. It's the podcast that celebrates your white trash and mine. And remember, you don't have to be white to be white trash. Instead of studying philosophy, instead of finding a cure for cancer or world hunger, no. Each and every Saturday morning, we were in front of the TV watching WWE Mania or Superstars or Worldwide, watching 605, Saturday night's main event, or Heroes of World Class. Yes, indeed, all the time that we wasted watching that lovely white trash soap opera that you and I call professional wrestling. And we have got a show for you today. Coming up in just a little bit, we have got an announcement of a guest that I am honestly entirely too excited that they are coming on the show. I see it as a very big guest and a very fun get, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, and I hope you're as excited as I am because it's going to be amazing. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a few minutes. I am going to be gone the next couple of weeks. Pat McNeil is going to be here, but when I come back on the 24th of this month, it's going to be very exciting because we are going to have the one and only Bruce Pritchard on the show. But that's not the big surprise guest. The big surprise guest is going to be on October 1st, and I'll tell you about that in just a few minutes. But Bruce Pritchard on the 24th, of course, you know him from Brother Love, also Vince McMahon's right-hand man for decades in the WWE. And he and I have a bit of a connection, and we'll talk about that on the 24th. Where we talk about we met for the first time and only time in Tacoma, Washington, on that fateful night that Raw had the WCW main event. And we'll talk about that, and I'll get his thoughts on that. And it should be a lot of fun, but we look forward to having Bruce Pritchard on the show in just a few weeks here on Saturday Morning Wrestling. But we have got a show here today coming up in a few minutes. We're going to have my pal from NWA Fan Fest, the lovely Jeannie Clark on the show. Lady Blossom from WCW. She, of course, connected to Stone Cold Steve Austin, the ex-wife of Steve Austin, the mother of his children. We'll talk to her live from Essex, England, hopefully. Fingers crossed that it will all work out, I hope. We'll see what happens. Otherwise, you better call in with some stuff because I'm going to need some time to fill because God knows I don't know if I can do 90 minutes on my own. I need the help. Not going to lie. Need the help. But you can call in and help a brother out at 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. That's the new number here on the live cast, the PW Torch live cast, for some freaking reason. I have no idea why, but there you go. So we'll have Jeannie Clark. She'll come on. We'll talk. She was actually in Portland for a while, so I knew her from Portland. She was also married to a Portland wrestling legend. Does he count as a legend? Is Billy Jack a legend? Oh, okay. He's a legend in the criminal justice system. But yes, Billy Jack Haynes. She was married to Billy Jack for a while. Again, she came to Portland. She was involved in World of Sport. You know her from Texas Wrestling, from USWA World Class, and, of course, in WCW. And she's probably her biggest contribution, as you've probably heard the story, but we'll talk about it. She was the one who came up with the Stone Cold nickname, and we'll talk about that and much more. But she and I bonded at the NWA Legends Fan Fest, where I was sleeping. After a night out with Britt Whitmire, we were out at some homeless shelters and soup kitchens taking care of the homeless. And, you know, it was just such a long night of charity. Was that her name, Charity?
I think that was her name. But anyway,
we were out with, and I had thought to myself, you know, I don't know. We'll see if I can make it. If I make it, great. If not, no big deal.
Then I get a text from Greg Price, the promoter of NWA Legends FanFest, asking me if I wanted to host the Q&A. And he's like, oh, we need you down here in like 20 minutes. And I'm like, well, I got to get in the shower. I got to clean the stank off me. And so, but it was a lovely time. She was a nice woman. And, you know, she hadn't been in the United States in 15 years. So she was, you know, understandably, never done a fan fest, never done a Q&A. She was very nervous. And she did great. And so we'll talk about the NWA Fan Fest and all the stuff that's going on in the world of Lady Blossom, Jeannie Clark, in a little bit here on the live cast. But coming up, we want to talk about some anniversaries this week, some major anniversaries this week in the world of wrestling. We'll talk about that and more coming up in just a bit here. It's Saturday Morning Wrestling. It's Jim Valley. It's PWTorchLiveCast.com.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in PWTORCH.com/Amazon. That's PWTORCH.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership. New ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member.
Thank you for joining me. It's Jim Valley on the PW Torch live cast Saturday Morning Wrestling, where we wallow in our wrestling fandom of the days gone by when you were younger, prettier, thinner, and had fewer cares in the world. And let's face it, wrestling was better. And it was still real to you, damn it. Of course, a lot of people in wrestling this week talking about the passing of Mr. Fuji, Harry Fujiwara. Geez, the guy lived to be 82 years old, and he was a legend in wrestling, and I take nothing away from what the guy accomplished and what he meant to the business. There's no question about it. One of the themes of this show that we talk about here are the characters in wrestling, about the crazy characters. And I think that's one of the appeals to me of professional wrestling, is that, you know, back when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, there was Muhammad Ali who would cut promos and things, but most athletes back then would give you know, interviews about God and country and their mom and, you know, we're going to win and we're going to do the best we can. And they were very humble and to be honest, very boring. And maybe that's why sports didn't appeal to me as a kid, because the interviews were so boring. And, of course, now, today, athletes have learned that they can get big shoe deals and TV deals and announcing gigs and stuff if they are more verbose. I mean, UFC is built on that. And I wonder sometimes if maybe I'd be a bigger fan of sports, real sports, you know what I'm talking about, competitions, where if the interviews were more like they are today, where there's more athletes talking smack and getting personalities across and things. I wonder about that sometimes. But that's why I think it's one of the things why I love wrestling, because I'm really boring. I'm very polite. I'm very reserved, by and large, when I'm not on the air. And I try to be very polite and very honest in things in my life. And maybe that's the appeal of professional wrestling, is you have all of these crazy characters that came from carnivals and came from just doing nutty, wacky stuff. You know, people like, you know, Don Fargo and Mr. Fuji. Mr. Fuji, as you probably know, if you didn't know before his death, was not actually Japanese. He was Hawaiian. And this was a very common thing. I mean, a theme in professional wrestling for years was patriotism and nationalism. And that's really kind of something that's kind of gone by the wayside, maybe around the early 90s with the Iraqi thing with Sergeant Slaughter. It just got too real for people. And even they tried, you know, something that was, you know, with Ludwig Borga, you may remember, Tony Holm, in the early 90s with Lex Luger, where they tried a Scandinavian country. And that didn't really work. But, you know, Mr. Fuji and in the Northwest, he wrestled with Haru Sasaki and Mr. Saito and Toru Tanaka, you know, those stereotypical Japanese stars that came out of World War II. And there was also the Germans. We talked about Baron von Raschke last week. You know, and Kurt von Kurtenkarl von Steiger, the von Brauners, Hans Schmidt, another World War II stereotype. And, you know, for years that was a theme. I mean, Japanese wrestling was based on Ricky Dozan after World War II and the Sharp brothers pretending to be Americans coming in and the Japanese getting their quote-unquote revenge or showing that they were superior to Americans after World War II and the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima in the world of professional wrestling. Even in Mexico, you had people playing the ugly Americans in Mexico. I mean, Art Barr and Eddie Guerrero played the ugly Americans down in Mexico. It's funny how Eddie Guerrero, who was born in El Paso and was American by blood and by everything, you know, played the stereotypical Mexican in the United States and then played the stereotypical American in Mexico. Same thing with Art Barr. You know, when Worlds Collide, that pay-per-view very much based on nationalism. And Mr. Fuji demonstrated that. I mean, you had the Pearl Harbor attack and the sneaky Japanese and the throwing of the salt. Tojo Yamamoto, another one. Tojo Yamamoto, a little tiny guy, but he's a legend in Memphis. Little tiny guy, but everyone was afraid of him. And he had those the flat sandals, the wood sandals that he used as foreign objects. But Mr. Fuji started in Hawaii, came to the Northwest. That was his first full-time territory. People still talk about him. His partner here in the Northwest, because, you know, as you know, growing up, you know, African-Americans always teamed with African-Americans. Indians, Native Americans always teamed with Native Americans. You know, and Japanese, of course, always teamed with Japanese. And his tag team partner here in the Northwest was a man by the name of Haru Sasaki. And Haru Sasaki was, you know, very much like Mr. Fuji, same idea. And he ended up homesteading here. And after a while, Haru Sasaki, you know, stayed here for so long that he eventually became a babyface. And he went from the stereotypical Japanese heel to, you know, this almost like uncle-like character. And he stayed here, and matter of fact, he worked in a deli in a grocery store in the Portland area for years and years and years, and people would go in and see him. And like I said, he became from this evil, salt-throwing World War II sneaky Japanese stereotype. He was here for so long that eventually he became like this beloved uncle in Portland. And Mr. Fuji kind of did too as well in the WWF. But, Dutch Savage tells a story, you can find it on YouTube, of he and Lonnie Mayne getting Mr. Fuji drunk on a trip down to Medford. And they got him drunk, and you can watch the story on YouTube. I don't want to spoil it for you, but it's pretty funny. It is one of those crazy character stories. But you probably know, and I think most people that talked about Mr. Fuji and his dad talked about him as a manager and talked about, Yoko's run with Yokozuna and his run with Demolition and things like that. And also, and this is kind of what I want to get into. When people today, they complain about wrestling. Oh, Roman Reigns this and John Cena that. And oh my God, that was stupid and this was stupid. And the same people that complain about the stupidity in wrestling today, and I'm not saying these complaints aren't valid, because they are. But the same people who complain about wrestling today and how stupid it is go, oh my gosh, I loved Fuji Vice and Fuji General and Fuji Bandito and all these terrible things that they had on Tuesday Night Titans and all this stuff. I mean, that stuff was awful. I remember as a kid, even though I was a kid, I hated all that stuff. It was the worst. I mean, it was so embarrassing. I mean, they got those people, a lot of times Morocco and the actors in it, doing those sketches, they were all drunk. And it was just a rib on them almost, because they knew that they were terrible actors. Vince knew that they were terrible actors, but they got enjoyment doing those things. But it's just funny how stuff that you hate now is someone else's nostalgia. And someone else looks back on it fondly. And that's, we're seeing that now with John Cena. And we're seeing it now with other things, but it's just funny how stuff that is terrible that you didn't like, people, just because you're younger and you're thinner and you're better looking and life feels safer, you end up loving it. But regardless of how terrible Mr. Fuji was, you still you look back on him with fondness, and deservedly so. One of wrestling's great characters, one of wrestling's great ribbers, and I don't know. Just God bless Mr. Fuji. May he rest in peace. Hey, coming up, we'll talk about some other big anniversaries this week. But not only that, we have got a major announcement, which I will tell you about next, which is very exciting, about a guest that I'm thrilled to have. And we'll talk about her coming up next.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
What do you think of that ad with Wade Keller? It's funny how Batista is now nostalgia. But, he had a great career, too. It's Jim Valley. We're back Saturday morning wrestling. And speaking of nostalgia, this week they announced the casting for the new Netflix series, a drama, a scripted series, based on GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And if you're too young to remember GLOW, it was in like 1986 to 1990, and it was this divas division of wrestling, this really campy, over-the-top version of professional wrestling. And you can find some of it online, and you really should, because, David McLean, the promoter of it, has tried many times, many incarnations, to get GLOW going in one form or another. I think they're trying again now with WOW Superstars, Women of Wrestling, but he's tried Powerful Women of Wrestling, and it's always based on these strong characters, these very distinctive fantasy-like characters, and wacky comedy, and the in-ring action never really mattered. And growing up as a kid, I did not like GLOW at all. And you'd think that I would because I was young and horny and, you know, they definitely were about good-looking women for the most part and some titillation and things like that. But, I was a purist when it came to professional wrestling. I loved my wrestling pure, so I hated GLOW. Hated it. Just the worst. And because I thought it was a mockery of wrestling. I know. But anyway, a few years ago, and you should look this up. I think it's online, and they show it a lot on the Logo channel. If you check your DVR, you can find it. But there was a documentary a few years ago about the gorgeous ladies of wrestling, and they all reconnected for an anniversary at Cauliflower Alley a few years ago. And if you go to Cauliflower Alley, a lot of times Little Egypt and Roxy Astor and a lot of the women of wrestling, gorgeous women of wrestling, are there. And I've tried a few times to get Little Egypt on and a few of the GLOW women, and it just hasn't worked out. But I am now happy to say that not only am I getting a GLOW woman on the show on October 1st, but we are getting what I consider to be the premier gorgeous lady of wrestling, because not only has she done GLOW, not only has she done POW, but she's done a ton of acting, she's done movies, and she's also done roller derby. And she's in need of some help right now, and we're going to talk to her. She's one of the great characters of wrestling. Coming on the show, Matilda the Hun, Queen Kong, you may know her. Look her up. She's a large woman, like 6'9". And she's been on Married with Children, and she was in the Police Academy movies or the Naked Gun movies. And like I said, she's done mud wrestling, and she's done. And here's the other thing. I do want to make this clear. This is obviously, Wade likes to keep these shows minivan friendly, and we certainly do our best. Sorry about Bill Bundy dropping the F-bomb last week, but it happens. But and we will do our best when she's on to keep it as minivan friendly as possible. But part of her story, and we'll try to talk about this as grown up as possible, but it still is some adult content, so keep that in mind. But she did mud wrestling, and she also did some other adult content. And that's part of her story because it led to, and she's not ashamed of it, and because it led to her wrestling career. So we do have to talk about it briefly at least. So just keep that in mind. We'll try to keep it as clinical as possible, but it is part of the story and it's kind of hard to ignore. So, but she's an all-time great character. She's hilarious, and I'm very, very excited to have her on the show. I think this is going to be one of the great interviews that we've done, and we've done a lot of great interviews on the show. So in about a month, Queen Kong, Deanna Booher, Matilda the Hun is going to be on the show. So we'll talk gorgeous ladies of wrestling. We'll talk roller derby. We'll talk acting. We'll talk mud wrestling. She's done all of the carny stuff. And she's in some bad shape right now. And she's got a GoFundMe for some of her health issues. So if you like the interview, if you remember Queen Kong, maybe you want to kick in a couple of bucks to help her out because she's got some medical issues. And as a person who's had some medical issues myself, I understand how that goes. So keep that in mind that we're going to have Dee Booher. Queen Kong, Matilda the Hun, is going to be on the show, and I'll tweet out some pictures of her if you're not quite sure who she is, but this is going to be great. I'm ridiculously excited to have her on the show. And also, don't forget, in a couple of weeks, in about 3 weeks, I guess, Bruce Pritchard from the WWE is going to be on the show, and of course, he's got a new podcast on MLW Radio with Conrad Thompson, and thank you to Conrad Thompson for helping us get this online, but I'm very excited about that. So we're really trying to do some cool interviews, trying to do some different stuff here, and hopefully you'll sign up at pwtorch.com/goivip and show your appreciation for the work I do here on Saturday Morning Wrestling as we go down memory lane. Speaking of Batista and him being nostalgia, this week SmackDown celebrated its 17th anniversary. Been on the air now for 17 years, which is incredible. Remember, it used to be on the, was it on the CW first or UPN first? I think it was UPN first. Because didn't it help launch UPN? They had UPN, and then they had the Star Trek, the new Star Trek that they brought back, and SmackDown, and those were kind of the first shows that really kind of were supposed to attract people and have them watch UPN. God, isn't that crazy? You think about all of the shifts in technology and, you know, UPN and the CW and stuff. I guess the CW is still on the air, but you look back now and you go, what a mistake that was to, you know, that turned out when UPN launched, the timing really wasn't great because it was the peak of cable television. And the everything went down from there. Anyway, everything sort of went down from there, and it really was kind of terrible timing as far as a terrible time to try to put a network on because, like I said, it was really the peak of cable television. And now everything, we see where we are with so much streaming and cord cutting and everything like that it really was a terrible time. But SmackDown, God, remember what it was? I mean, it was great. Used to be the Rock's TV show, and they had all those major matches on SmackDown, and it was really exciting. And now, I mean, SmackDown right now is fine. But it's, I mean, right now it's a very easy show to watch. It's they don't do too much. They don't do, you know, to me you could argue they do too little. It doesn't have the most star power in the world, but it's. I don't know, just 17 years of SmackDown. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. It's going to be interesting what the future holds. All right. Well, let's switch gears here. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll have her on. You know her as Lady Blossom from WCW. She's been connected with Chris Adams, Billy Jack Haynes, and, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and she's got a new book out. And we'll talk to Jeannie Clark, the lovely Jeannie Clark, coming up next here on the BW Torch Livecast. Saturday Morning Wrestling, it's Jim Valley, and we're glad you're here.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
And we're back. Saturday Morning Wrestling with Jim Valley. Each and every Saturday on the PW Torch Livecast. You can listen live or download at PWTorchLivecast.com. And I want to thank you. You know, I mentioned this when I did the livecast this week on Wednesday with Wade Keller, but the numbers for this show have been great. I mean, I'm always in one of the – I'm never the top show, which I shouldn't be because it's a nostalgia show, but I'm always, like, in the top two or three. This week we were number two, and thank you for that as far as Torch shows go. I mean, when I started this thing, you know, being on Saturday and – doing a nostalgia show, and so much of the Torch is driven by modern wrestling and reactions to things that are happening now in the world of professional wrestling. The fact that you have enjoyed the show and supported it in the numbers you have, I really, really appreciate it. And I've tried to pay you back by doing the best show that we can here and getting some different guests, trying to do some new things. And it's been a very positive and pleasant experience. And I really, really appreciate it. Speaking of pleasant, as I mentioned before, a few weeks ago, I went to the NWA Fan Fest in Charlotte a couple of weeks ago, and I was excited to go. It's always fun, but, you know, one of the things is, you know, I mean, I don't live in Charlotte. I don't know a lot of the people in Charlotte, and it's very much like a family reunion. And just by chance, because of this show and some of the interviews I did, I got a random text from the promoters asking me if I would come down and do the one of the Q&As with the first person who did a Q&A. And it went so well that I was lucky enough to get to do all the Q&As that weekend. And not only did I get to interview some of my favorite stars from childhood, but I got to interact with so many fans, a lot of people coming up and really appreciating the job I did. But it was also fun to talk about memories and things. And to me, that was the highlight, that I actually got to engage with so many people and so many folks that had mutual experiences growing up and watching wrestling. And the woman who kicked it off, who I got to hang out with a little bit at Charlotte, and really had a lovely time with her and her daughter. And I'm glad she's joining us now live. The ex-wife of Steve Austin, the former valet of stunning Steve Austin, and she's been involved in wrestling and around wrestling, and she's got a great story. And we're so happy that she's one of the success stories of professional wrestling. Joining us now live from England, fingers crossed, is the lovely Lady Blossom, Jeannie Clark. Jeannie, how are you today?
Hi, Jim. I'm doing really good, thank you. It's so good to hear your voice, because I haven't actually heard your voice since Charlotte, and I just remember doing the very first Q&A I've ever done, and we were walking back there, and I was so nervous. But you made me feel so comfortable, and then it just kind of flowed. But I was quite anxious before my very first Q&A, but I was so excited to come back to the States, because it had been 15 years since I'd come back, you know, got a chance to come back, and it's what a great show to go to in Charlotte. So with Greg Price, and I was just ecstatic, and so was Cassie, and thank you for looking after us so much while we were there.
Well, that was the thing. I will say this, that, you know, I mean, so much of the Charlotte Fan Fest, it's gone on for years, and it's very much, as you saw, like a family reunion, and I think that they've forgotten that you were new and you hadn't been in the States, and I will say this, they should have had somebody with you, and I sort of fell into that role, and I was happy to do it, to take care of you as best I could, even though I didn't know much more than you. But it was lovely. Yeah, Cassie's a lovely young woman, and she's very cool, and we both have some common interests as far as travel and liking roadside attractions and tacky tourist stuff. So it was a lot of fun to talk to her, and
it was,
like I said, it was so much fun.
One of Cassie's biggest memories from growing up in the States was Chuck E. Cheese. Do you remember that? And there was a Chuck E. Cheese, and she wanted to go to Chuck E. Cheese and take some video. And we were thinking, oh, we'd just call a taxi. And then you told us about that Lyft, you know, the company called Lyft, and we didn't have Wi-Fi. And we were so appreciative that you booked us that and waited for us, and it was very, very nice. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a funny story. Yeah, Cassie's what? Is she 20?
Yeah, she's almost 20.
Okay.
But
yeah, it was funny.
Childhood memory of, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, it makes perfect sense when you explain it. I think we're all nostalgic for things like that in our childhood. But when you first said it, I was like, what? It struck. You know, you don't hear people say that a lot, but then when you explained it, it made perfect sense, and it was very, very, very sweet. I was happy to help facilitate that with you. But let's talk a little bit about how did you get connected with the Fan Fest, with NWA Legends?
I just spoke with Greg Price, and he had obviously known that I'd never done a convention, and it kind of coincided with me having a new book. So we just chatted, and he invited me along, and I was really grateful for that. And I got to see a lot of people that I hadn't seen in years.
Yeah, let's
you know, I saw Magnum was one.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Like, for example, you know, I mean, with wrestling fans, we, you know, it's like, you know, we just assume, like, oh, if you're on TV with so-and-so, that you must, oh gosh, you guys are best friends, and you must go out and to dinner, and you must hang out all the time. And if you're not on TV, well, then together, then, oh gee, you know, who knew that they knew that person and such, you know, just those kind of perceptions. But like, for example, I know that one of the people that you wanted to see, that get you together with was Bobby Fulton. Tell me about your relationship with Bobby Fulton. I mean, that's someone that I don't know that people would necessarily associate you with.
Well, I remember Bobby because Chris and I worked with him in the territories, And it was about 30 years since I'd seen him. But I just talked to him on Facebook, and he did a quote for my book. And I thought he looked great, and it was just like it was yesterday that I spoke to him, but I just put it together. Gosh, that's been 30 years since I've seen him. And most people there I hadn't seen for 25 years, and it was just great, you know, to say hi after all this time. It's like going full circle.
Exactly. I know it's like, you know, you obviously know these people, but you were so excited to see some of your old friends. You know, you almost looked, I just looked like on the surface you're not, but you look, you know, you looked like you were a fan because, you know, you had pictures of Nikita Koloff and Lex Luger and all these people. I guess it was sort of like a, you know, almost like a college or high school reunion for you.
Well, Lex Luger I knew in WCW, but I was a fan of Nikita with his ministry. And, you know, I just thought it would be really cool to go say hi. And, yeah, I mean, I really appreciate Nikita's work that he's done. And he was one of the people that I just wanted to go say hi to. I never worked with him, but
were there any memories that came back that you'd forgotten about because of reconnecting with anybody, any stories or anything that you went, oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that?
Yeah, there was actually. Magnum is the one that actually hired me for WCW. And I remember, you know, going to work there. But then when I was pregnant and I left WCW, Magnum, possibly I'm thinking about 1993, he used to sell these personal attack alarms. And I remember he came over to Steve and I's house, and I worked for him for a while selling those. And I forgot all about that. But, you know, it was just a little job I did after I came out of wrestling. And I would go around trying to sell these personal attack alarms that Magnum had, you know, had helped me start this business. So little things like that. And, you know, just several people that you haven't seen and you just start chatting and you remember things. But I just was happy to see Jen Ross. That was another one. I used to talk to her all the time. She's a lovely lady. And I just was, wow, you know, how are you? Because the last time I saw her, I think, was WrestleMania 13 when I went along with Steve and he was wrestling Bret Hart. So just this massive span of time. And, yeah, I just have a lot of memories from Charlotte, and it's really cool.
You know, your daughter, you mentioned, is coming up on 20, and so that means, you know, she was very, very young and doesn't remember, you know, your wrestling career or probably much of her father's wrestling career, if any. What was it like for her to really, you know, to see live in person, you know, some of her, you know, personal history as well? Was that, did she have any observations?
Well, Cassidy, out of my three daughters, is actually a fan of the industry, and she probably knows more about it than I do just because she actually loves the business. So, you know, she watched mainly the Attitude Era, but she's a fan of the business, so she knows quite a lot, and she really likes to come along to events with me, and I like having her there too.
Was there anybody that she was excited to meet? Was she a fan of anyone? Or are these people a different generation for her?
I don't think she knew as many people in Charlotte, but she got along with everybody really well, and she likes taxidermy, and she kind of takes a bit after Steve there, because growing up she used to go to a lot of the taxidermy places because Steve was a hunter, you know, and she kind of picked that up from him. And Bobby Fortin said to her that he'd caught a big fish and perhaps she could stuff it for him. Sorry, it's just a funny story, but But, you know, Cassie, everybody was really nice.
Yeah, Cassie has some very eclectic interests. There's no doubt about it. She's very interesting. She can talk about a lot of different things. She seems to be wise beyond her years, so good for her. Well, let's talk about you and you know, you look great. You've got this new book out, Through the Shattered Glass, that you can find at Amazon that people are buying, and I've heard a lot of good things about it, so that's exciting. I guess let's start with you. What was your life like? You know, describe yourself growing up in England. How, you know, were you a girly girl? Were you a tomboy? What kind of girl were you?
I dwell extensively on my childhood, and it's a bit of a sad story because my father died when I was 7, and my mom actually had a lot of problems with alcohol, and I was a little bit of a street kid, but about the age 10 years old, unfortunately, we did have to get put into a, I guess, I don't know what they call it in the States, but it would be like where social services would be kind of like an orphanage. I don't know if you call it that or a home. But I kind of had to live in this home. But in a way, after initially trying to run away, I actually had the routine that I needed. We would always have meals at set times, and I know that it should be normal, but it wasn't to me as a child. And you know, I got to learn to swim and play tennis, and I lived there till for a few years, and then my mom was still quite ill. She's okay now, but she's quite ill with alcohol, and my childhood was quite hard. But I used to be like a bit of a normal teen. I used to like to go to concerts with my friends, and the music of the 70s, like David Bowie and Queen. I would follow all these bands and go to all these bands. And one of my friends who was always tagging along with me, her dad was a wrestling fan. I'd never been to wrestling before in my life, but he got ill. And I went to my very first wrestling match in 1978, I think. And that's where I met Chris.
You'd gotten involved in the whole world of sports scene then.
Yes, I did, because Chris had only been working for about a year, and he was a black belt in judo. As a matter of fact, he was on the British squad, and his brother was an Olympic silver medalist. So he was high up on the judo, but he wanted to get into wrestling. And, you know, what had happened was we had started dating, and I started running his fan club. And then he came up with the idea that I could be his second, because they have different rules in England where they have rounds. And so it's like a boxing second where you come in and you give the wrestler the water, and that you don't have the interference in the matches like you do out there. And I started traveling as Chris's valet, if you want, in 79, I believe. And we got a lot of publicity for it because it wasn't really anything that you would see back then in the English scene.
Because you were young and attractive? Yeah, they probably had more like a corner type boxing type second as opposed to a young attractive young blonde.
Yeah.
But talk about the world of sport, and how big was it at that time period in England? With, you mentioned, you know, obviously Big Daddy and Kendo Nagasaki. You mentioned Dynamite Kid, Davey Boy Smith. How big was it at that point?
It was massive. Everybody watched wrestling on a Saturday afternoon, and even the Queen would be a fan of watching wrestling. It was just awesome. You know, I mean, everybody used to love going to the shows, and obviously it was sad that it all ended. But, you know, the guys were really tough. They really protected the industry in this country back then. And, you know, I just was so intimidated when I first started being the only girl hanging out with these guys in the dressing room. But everybody was really sweet to me. And but it had a massive following. And, you know, sometimes it's quite sad that these guys are quite forgotten because, I mean, they had to do three rounds. I think it was about 12 rounds. It was, but there would be several rounds that you think about, they'd have to remember three different finishes. And they were tough, but it was more like a sport, and it didn't have any of the soap opera kind of storyline like in the States. So it was really like a sport.
How did the fans react in England versus fan reaction in the United States?
It was really like they clap. Just like when they did like a high spot or something, everybody clapped. We, in the States, would be more into it. But, you know, it was kind of like more quiet. They were more reserved.
Now, what was it like let me just jump ahead briefly here for a second. Like when you came to the United States and saw, you mentioned the world of sport was more athletically based. What were your reactions to the American style with more cheating and outside interference and more soap opera type drama and effects?
I thought it was a lot more fun. A lot more fun, you know. When I got to work in world class as a heel, and my character was Chris had come up with this evil ex-wife angle, and he'd say, "Oh, say this, say that," and oh my God, they used to coax on me and chant all these really bad things. Hey, but obviously that was meant to be a compliment. But it was great. It was a lot of fun, especially at the Sportatorium. That place
sure.
was just so cool.
Yeah, we can talk about that. By the way, if you want to call up and talk with Jeannie Clark, Lady Blossom, you can do so at 515-605-9345. You can also email at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at Twitter at Jim Valley, and we'll talk with the lovely Jeannie Clark. We'll get into some more of your history, but let's take a phone call or two right now for Jeannie Clark. Let's go to 240, area code 240. You're on the live cast. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, what do you got for Jeannie Clark this morning?
My question is, what's the wildest conspiracy theory you've heard from Billy Jack Hayes, and is there any truth to what he says in these conspiracy theories?
I could answer you that question. No. Anyway, go ahead, Jeannie. For those who don't know, before we get into it, Jeannie came. We'll get into her career, but she logged some time when I was a kid in Portland wrestling, and you know she hasn't mentioned this yet, but she was never actually married to Chris Adams. That was just an angle, but they were together for a long time and have a child together. But after Chris, she was married for a time to infamous Northwest wrestler Billy Jack Haynes. But your experience with Billy Jack was different than the persona that we know now, right, Jeannie?
Yeah, because we're going back to 83, and I don't think he had been wrestling that long. So all this stuff that's happened over the last few years, I'm not really aware of any of, you know, these lawsuits, etc. I don't know anything about that. But at that time, now, you know, Chris and I, we were a couple, the boyfriend, girlfriend, wasn't married. We'd been together 5 years. We came from England to Los Angeles together, and we were staying in the real glamorous part of LA at the time for us. Remember, we were really young in Santa Monica, and, you know, we had the weather and the beach, and we were in awe of it. And we had no money, and because Chris only got like $40, I think, for the week, and I ended up working, and we both managed to survive with me helping out with the money. And when all that folded and we moved up to Portland, I think along the way, Chris said, I'm not going to like it in Portland. And I think what he meant was he liked that life, glamorous kind of lifestyle of living on the beach. You got the girls in the bikinis and you could walk anywhere. And when we got to Portland, he didn't think he'd like it. But what I noticed about the Portland territory is that Chris, bearing in mind, he was only about 24. He wasn't used to as much female attention. I don't recall it in the world of sport, and I don't recall it in LA, but there were a lot of girls, and Chris obviously was young, and he got tempted. And basically, Chris, if you think about me, I was working every day in LA, and when I got to Portland, I had no sort of independent making any money, and I had no job, and I had no green card to get a job, and I didn't have a car, so it was very, very much isolated. But I think with Chris having all this attention, he started to act on it, and constantly I had women calling the house, and, you know, he was cheating on me, just to put it bluntly, and I had dealt with that for a long time, and it kept recurring and recurring, and I felt betrayed, and I became very lonely and very depressed with it.
Well, you also were a young mother, too. You also were a young mother,
right?
I was
a young mom, yeah. And, you know, Chris, he would go to the arena and not come home all night long. And I would, back then we didn't have, you know, mobile phones and all of that. So I would sit there and have to worry. And he'd come home like a couple of days later, and he'd been out partying. There was a guy by the name of Ralph, who the boys called Dirty Ralph, because he was like supplying them with, like, I think it was more pot than anything. And he always had loads of women around him and cocaine, etc. And Chris kind of got to where he was just neglecting me, really. And I was left sitting at home. I had left with no money, you know, and I had no friends. I had no support system, no family. And it was very, very difficult, because as much as he kept saying sorry and I believed him, then he would do it again. And actually, I'd gone home to the UK because I needed to go to a funeral. And when I came back, this one particular girl was calling the house. And one day, because I was so lonely and I had nobody, I remember Billy, I think he was visiting Tommy Rogers, and I just got to saying to him how sad I was. And he said, he actually said to me, well, I often don't understand. I've said to Adams, this is his words, you know, how come you treat Jeannie like that? And Chris apparently, well, Billy told me, Chris said, well, it's a little bit like having a steak every night. Every once in a while, you would like a piece of chicken. It was really insulting to me, really hurt my feelings. And then Billy said, but, you know, I would be happy with that. And basically, I told him I couldn't even move back to the UK because I had no money for a flight, had no options, really. And then he said to me he would help me out. And at that time, you know, he was nice to me. That's how it happened, really. I was just, like, very lonely, and I didn't feel I had any options, and I certainly wasn't controlling Chris in as much as he was just going off and doing his own thing. And I felt really betrayed by Chris. We took a few years before Chris and I to become friends again, which we obviously did because we did the angle. But at that time, all I remember was just feeling very, very, very hurt like this and angry and resentful. And you know, Dave was like, well, I'll help you.
You know, Ryan, to get back to your original point, to kind of put a bow on it, you know, Billy Jack legitimately came from the wrong side of the track, so to speak. And the way people have explained it to me that knew him and knew him in that era was that, you know, he was legitimately trying to turn his life around. And, you know, sometimes best laid plans go to waste. And it sounds like, you know, he was very nice to Jeannie, but then, you know, over time things just sort of reverted back to the way he was. And as far as his infamous conspiracy videos and shoot videos and stuff, you know, I think those are just a way to get attention and a way to make money and seem relevant in today's age. At least that's my personal theory on Billy Jack. You have?
Yeah. I have not seen those.
Okay.
I'm not aware of any conspiracies. I've just heard ramblings of, you know, a lawsuit. So I don't actually know all that's going on. But, you know, we're talking 30 years ago that I knew him. So it's not anything I know from 23 years old, you know. So,
I remember going to the Portland Sports Arena in that era. And a vivid memory that I have, you know, Tommy Rogers, known from the Fantastics, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. Very young, good-looking guy, tremendous abs. Like I said, very, very good-looking young man. And I remember him going, you know, Portland Sports Arena, kind of your typical grungy arena. And the fans would, you know, there wasn't much, weren't many barricades or any protections for the wrestlers. And the heels would come down and they'd have, like, security around them to keep them from getting hurt. But I remember guys like Tommy Rogers in particular and Chris Adams, they would get mobbed by female fans coming down.
That's right.
To the ringside area. I mean, you could barely see them coming through the crowd from all of the fans and all of the women in particular, just mobbing them.
So you can imagine, you know, Chris having all that attention for the first time and how much of a temptation that will be. But you can also put the shoe on the other foot and say, I was his girlfriend and I was the mother of his child who was used to be very independent working, and suddenly he's now going with all the girls at the arena. And do you know how humiliating that was? Because I would go to, they had some spot shows up there, they had like Salem, Eugene, anyway, it was the same show once a week, every, like Portland was a Friday, and I would go to those shows and I would be sitting there while these girls were sleeping with my boyfriend. So just to get an idea of how humiliating and devastating that was for me, then I took the offer of Billy Jack because I had no other option. And he was nice. He was nice to me. So it was, is what it is, you know, and it, at that time, that's how it was.
Well,
it didn't last, but you know, I didn't have no big fallout with Billy. It just wasn't enough love, I suppose.
Well, it
must
have been hard for you.
I had some feelings.
Sure. Well, it must have been hard for you because, I mean, you were, in my opinion, probably, you know, much, much more attractive than probably most of, I'm sure all of the women that were throwing themselves at Chris, and that's got to be hard on your self-esteem going, you know, look at me, I think I look good, and what's wrong with me? I imagine that's got to be really,
very,
really hard.
Very soul-destroying and hard on your self-esteem. But I think looking back and over Chris, with his wife Tony, I mean, it was a pattern again, and now Tony is was a very, very beautiful girl, absolutely gorgeous, and unfortunately I would see Chris doing the same. So I think it was just Chris couldn't stay with one girl or something, he just messed around all the time. with different women from the show. So even though I became friends with Chris, because we had a daughter and we were amicable, I wouldn't have wanted to be the woman in his life because he was a cheat. That's the only way I could say it.
You know, I'm friends with some people who partied with Chris back then, and and the way they described Chris was, you know, very nice when he was sober, very polite, very proper, and then, you know, you get him drunk or anything else, and he just is a different person. And another a friend of mine who had his wife. They would go out and hang out with the wrestlers and things. And his wife was also very attractive. And he said, you know, it was a regular occurrence to kind of shoo Chris away from his wife, as far as, you know, he was always chasing skirts.
That's correct.
You mentioned that the party scene in Portland was pretty strong.
Yes. Yeah. The very first time I ever used any mind-altering substance was Tommy Rogers and his wife Cindy at the time were living a couple apartments down from us, and they have like really strong weed there, I guess. I never smoked it in my life, honestly. And one day we were at Tommy's apartment, and he had this bong, like this really big bong, and he said, "Oh, take a bit," you know, and I don't know if I felt pressured or anyway, I actually went home and I couldn't shift this feeling, and I started to panic, and I actually called 911 and an ambulance came, but I thought I was going to die because I'd never taken anything in my life, and it was too strong for me, and I honestly panicked so bad. And I just remember Tommy and Chris with his ambulance lights outside the apartment in Portland, and they're like, "What the hell is going on?" And it was me. I'd called 911 because I thought I was going to die. And the guy comes in, he puts oxygen mask on my face, and Chris and Tommy, "It's okay, it's okay." But they never did call the police, so nobody got in trouble. But, so that was the very first time that I'd ever experienced any drugs of sorts there.
We're talking with Jeannie Clark. She's got a new book out called Through the Shattered Glass. You can find it at Amazon. Hey, before we move on from Portland, I do want to talk about another theme that we talk about on the show, since I grew up with Portland wrestling, is the infamous Bomber Hotel, which we've talked about on the show, is one of the places where the wrestlers stayed at. And you actually lived there for a spell. What were your impressions of the Bomber?
Not for very long. But, you know, it was kind of cool because it had a bit of an atmosphere to it, you know. But all as I remember is I had to walk everywhere from there, and I had a big pram, and I had Jade. And but I actually, you know, I kind of, like, could stay anywhere. We'd stayed worse. We were at the Flamingo West in Los Angeles in a studio apartment with no air conditioning in that heat. And, you know, you just kind of manage when you're young. So, you told me in Charlotte they've not got that there now, huh?
Well, the building is there, but the plane is gone. They had a B-52 or whatever, B-17 bomber plane. Yeah, that was right out front there, sort of a marking. And they've moved that and they're restoring it, but the Bomber facility, the structure is still there. And that was, I mean, it was sort of like a frat house for the wrestlers, as far as hanging out, drinking, barbecuing, partying, and it's very much a legendary place in Portland.
Yes.
Let's go to the phone line. Let's go to another phone call. Let's go to area code 862. 862, you're on Jeannie Clark. Who's this, and where are you calling? 862, hello. Hello, anybody? Anybody up? Oh, well, we'll put 862 on hold then and come back.
Okay.
Well, so let's talk about Obviously, you leave Portland. You're kind of you talked about you're in Florida. You're out of the business for a while. How did you get sucked back in? How did Dallas happen and the whole Stunning Steve, Jeannie Clark, Chris Adams, quote unquote ex-wife thing happen?
Okay. So Chris and I split up in Portland, and I married Billy, and I had a green card, and we were good friends, and but we wasn't able to have a proper relationship because it just didn't work out that way. And Billy got picked up, I think, in Florida by where Dusty Rhodes was. And Chris went on to World Class, where he started with the Von Erichs. And I went off to England for 6 months to try and get my head together because I loved the States. I knew I loved it there, and I did not want to go back and live in England. But I went back for a few months, and I would hear from Chris when he knew I was back there, and we sort of mended a lot of animosity I had towards him for his behavior. And we had a daughter, so Chris and I were amicable. And Billy also would phone me, so they both phoned me at this time when I was in England, and Billy said, you know, we should probably get a divorce, which was definitely a good idea. And we decided just to have a non-uncontested divorce. And so he was living in Florida. So he flew me into Florida, and he actually got me an apartment for 6 months, which he paid for. And I had a green card. And because Florida kind of was a little bit like the LA scene, I really loved it in Tampa. And I got a job for Estee Lauder as a makeup artist, and I actually stayed in Florida. But one day Chris phoned me, and he said, there's a wrestler he was working with called Gino Hernandez, and this was his first idea to do this ex-wife angle. Because I was really content in Florida with my job and added some stability with my daughter, Jade, I wasn't sort of ready just to up and leave to go to Dallas. And I was also dating somebody, so I was quite content in my life just then. And that's when I think they put Baby Doll with, who I was so excited to meet, in Charlotte, by the way, and they put Baby Doll with Gino. But eventually the guy that I was dating left, and I was just one day Chris phoned and he said it would be cool to go to Dallas and we'd both be able to see Jade, our daughter, and just decided, okay. And so I went to Dallas, and Chris got me an apartment at a place called Lover's Lane. I was Gino's neighbor there, and Chris lived there. So we all three lived there, and I met Toni. And although she was a little bit upset first time I got there because I was his ex-girlfriend, you know, I soon put any fears she had to rest because there was no romantic interest with Chris. So we were, you know, I would actually go to the sportatorium before the angle periodically, not too often, because I started my own business doing novelty telegrams, and I had a real successful business. I had about 10 employees. But occasionally I would go to the sportatorium and, I'd see the matches there, and we were all friendly, you know. And I remember the hair match with Chris and Gina. I was there at the Cotton Bowl, and I met Missy Hyatt there, so I had known her before I went into WCW. Basically, you know, we were all friendly, and then Chris started his wrestling school, and I remember him phoning me up saying, well, see, Gino had died as well, so the ex-wife angle never happened there. But he still had this idea that he'd had for years, really. He said, you know, I've got this one student is possibly the only one who's got potential out of the students, and that was Steve Williams, he said, and I think this is a perfect time to have a go at this ex-wife angle. Now, the tapings at the Sportatorium was just on a Friday night and a Saturday morning, and because I had 10 employees, I could take a couple days off, and it wasn't like going on the road. It was just local. I thought it would be fun. And I remember going into the Sportatorium on the first day, and Tony said, "Hi, this is Steve Williams." I'm like, "Hi." And he's like, "Yeah, hi." He turns around, walks away, and I said, "Oh dear, is this going to be okay to do this angle? Because, you know, he don't seem like he's too cool about it." And, you know, so my first experience with Steve was like he didn't seem too happy to do this angle. But as time went on, we would go into Chris's office with Jerry, and we became friends. And soon we started to enjoy the angle. We had a lot of fun.
So you gave up this successful business to do wrestling?
No. I worked my business 5-7 days a week, actually, and I had 10 employees. I only took off Friday night, and I still work Saturday night. So this at the Sportatorium was just a little bit of fun, but I still kept my business going for the rest of the week. During that angle, I was still working, my business.
You talk about how Steve didn't seem very very into everything at first. What were your impressions of a young Steve Williams?
Well, I thought he was very polite and very humble, but I always thought right from the beginning, if I'm honest, that he was highly competitive. I don't think he really ever wanted anybody with him, you know, to take his heat. Because I think in a lot of ways, Steve didn't like that later on with the ringmaster, and he's not really caught sharing. He's very, very competitive, and I noticed some of that competitiveness. If I look back, I didn't realize it at the time, because we would often have no money, but what I did, but he didn't at that time. And one of the things we used to do is take like a little trash can, and we put it at the end of the hotel room, and then you would take the beer can and flip it into the trash can. Whoever got it in the trash can would win the game. And then he kept beating me. And then he showed me a technique, this little flip wrist technique. And I got really good at it. And then I started to beat him. And then he said, "Oh, no, I'm not going to play anymore." So I thought, I've beaten him, so he doesn't want to play. And then another time we went fishing for catfish. And I just got really lucky, I suppose. But I caught like 13 catfish. I think he caught one. And he didn't like it. So I think he has this, and I often say to him, "I must play cards." No, I don't play cards. Why? Because I don't like losing. So I saw this really come, which is really good, because I think at the end of, you know, everything, I mean, that's exactly why he made it so big, because he's, he wants to win, and he did. But I think he would prefer to be a singles person more than with a manager - valet. But as the angle went on, I think he really started to enjoy it, because, you know, we did some really cool interviews, and I used to talk a lot, and we had a good laugh, really. It was really good fun doing the angle. And we ended up becoming really good friends for like 6 months before we dated. He was married anyway. So.
Now, has this moved on? I mean, it sounds like you really look back fondly on this time, being able to perform, have some fun, and have some not romantic, but some companionship, some friendship.
It was very fun. Percy Pringle was a blast, and, you know, the fans were amazing in the Sportatorium. It had that atmosphere that was electric, you know, and I think the fans made it so special there. And you know, every Friday was such a blast because Chris would always be the one who came up with what we were going to do for the angle. And Chris was very creative, actually. And he would, you know, tell me, say this, say that, and I would be, oh, and they would boo me. And but Steve and I had good chemistry. And, yeah, it was a great laugh. And I looked forward to it every Friday and then the Saturday morning. And then I went about doing my job. But what happened was Chris, at the time, had his own promotions called LNA Promotions. He did his own little spot shows. And he had one in Louisiana. I didn't really know how to get to Louisiana. And Chris said to me, well, hook up with Bronco. And you could drive with him. And Steve was driving. And on that trip to Louisiana, Steve kind of let me know he liked me. And so then we had, was a romance blossoming, if you like. So, but it was like a good 6 months after we met. And then I realized he was attracted to me.
Had you thought about him in that way before?
That was the start of our romance. Huh?
Had you thought about him in a romantic way prior to that?
Well, I found... I mean, he had a girlfriend, but he had felt like obligated. This is what he told me. He felt obligated to get married via his family. And God bless her, because she's a lovely girl, I'm sure. But he didn't seem like he was happy in that relationship. And although I didn't immediately have attraction to Steve, I always thought it was really nice. And doing the angle and our conversations, we became really close friends. And so there was an intimate kind of bond between us.
So for those who don't remember, you know, Steve Austin was obviously very good right from the start. And, you know, to get into an angle, a main angle, a drawing angle in Texas very early in his career is a testament to how good he was and how early it was in his career. And then it wasn't long after that that he was called and brought to Atlanta with WCW. And were you initially supposed to be part of the package on air, on camera?
No. No, and I was quite happy to visit him in Memphis at the time he was at, and I did that. I flew in there and saw him, and I carried on with my business because I had a lot of employees, and I worked really hard, and I needed to keep working because I had a lot of bills to pay, and I was making good money doing my telegram business. But when Steve would come back to Dallas from working, he really didn't talk too much about what was going on, and, you know, and I didn't ask him. But one day Magnum called the house for Steve because he would often stay at my house, and Magnum just heard, you know, sorry, Steve's not here, he's at the gym, and where are you from, and I like your accent, and what do you do? And I said, I used to work with Steve, you know, in world class. No, really. But I didn't know they hired Veronica because I didn't watch the show. So a lot of people say, what did you think of Veronica? Well, actually, I never saw her work or didn't meet her. But I heard a lot later, that they didn't think she had the chemistry with Steve, or she was too cute or too sweet in the role of a heel. She had kind of a nice... So they wanted somebody to be a little bit more like I was in world class. But to be honest, in world class, they used me all the time to talk. And some of that was part of my character. And it's strange because Magnum was the one who said, I like your accent and stuff like that. But then they never used me in a talking role in WCW. And I miss Chris and Tony terribly when I was up there because Chris was the one who gave me so much direction. And Dusty did say once, I was in the dressing room, and Chris had sent in a tape of the angle. And Steve had shot it down at that point because he'd fallen out with Chris. But it would have been the first crossover angle, I think, if it had come about. And I kind of was sad it didn't.
Were you disappointed that you didn't get to do a more active on-air role like you'd done in Texas?
Yeah, it was, really. Because Magnum had said to me, we like your accent, and part of, I think, the heat I got in World Class was because of my sort of Scottish accent and how I would act at that time. So I felt so lost in the BBC, Auckland Tony, and that, because, you know, I really had hoped that Dusty would bring them in, and he was going to, but unfortunately Steve didn't want that because him and Chris had fallen out, so he refused to work with him.
Now the Lady Blossom name, where did that come from, Dusty?
Yeah, it did, and I wish I had some prepared, man, because I hated it. And I heard later, I was like, oh no. You know, I just wish I'd have had a name, say, oh, can I be this? And I didn't. And later he said, not at the time, but later he said it was because my chest was blossoming out of the dress. But I hated that name.
Yeah. Dusty was a genius, but he had some weird ideas too sometimes. Sometimes some of the stuff that he came up with, you're just like, where did that come from? And I would definitely put the Lady Blossom name in that. In that category. We mentioned a lot of this we can find, and we've skipped around. You can find more details about some things in Jeannie's book. It's called Through the Shattered Glass. You can find it at Amazon. And obviously, you know, things took off, and you were there during, you know, Wade Keller obviously is got a relationship with Steve. He's on Steve's podcast quite a bit, and, you know, they've talked about their history and things like that. And, you know, one of the things that has been a theme with Wade that he talks about with the torch is that, you know, a lot of people recognized Steve's talent, and a lot of people saw how good he was early on, and a lot of fans who read the torch and other publications like the torch saw that he had a lot of potential and a lot of ability, but for some reason in Atlanta and WCW, management often overlooked him or just saw him at a certain level. Was that hard dealing with that kind of frustration for Steve?
Yeah, and bearing in mind he got the TV title from Bobby in the first few weeks he was there, so here we are coming in and he's already got the TV title, and not long after that he got another title, and I don't remember what it was. What happened was with Steve was They had Hogan come in, and I think they were paranoid on both their parts, Hulk and Steve, because, you know, because Hulk brought a lot of his buddies with him to work with that he probably trusted, and he might have been suspicious about who would do business with him, and obviously no one wants to, Steve, you know, had won these things that he was coming up and he probably didn't want to do jobs, but, you know, I think that frustrated him when Hulk came in. I don't know if you remember Jim Hacksaw. He came in did a squash match with Steve, and Steve got an injury. He wasn't exactly rushing to get back into the then shortly after that is when he got 90-day clause or something they had where Eric Bischoff fired him. And then he went to ECW and he did the Brit interviews. I don't know if you remember where he did a Hulk interview and a Bischoff interview, some brilliant interviews, you know, which showed his frustration at the you know, the politics and everything that went on in WCW.
Now, did you ever try to... Mm-hmm. Did you ever try to get back in as a character or anything during either his ECW or WWE runs or anything like that, or were you just being mom and keeping the house together?
Yeah, I don't know if you've read my unhappy childhood. Now you have to remember, we're in a city apartment, but we're happy on aging. And then we're in the Portland territory, and then we're back here. And I never had any sort of family home. So, no, I didn't get back in. Bearing in mind, I now have two daughters, but I left just pregnant. Stephanie was born in July, if you do the math, I was pregnant before I left. And then it was my first home, my first sense of a real family. So I was, like, coming up with actually some of the happiest times. And she was very, very happy up until whenever that will happen with Hulk Hogan coming in. And I wouldn't jeopardize that. And of course, Cassie came along. I'm mom of two kids, and I was very, very excited. I did like all this decorating home, and I had a sense of community. I had a lot of friends. I started to go to church. I had my neighbors, and so I had a really fulfilling, happy age. Steve somehow do so much stuff with the kids together. We join a duck team. We go up on four wheelers. We go and shoot guns. So I would say that the lead WCW, Steve, up until the issues with WCW were probably some of the happiest times of mine. We were very happy then.
As we're talking with Jeannie Clark, you can check out her book, Through the Shattered Glass, at Amazon.com. It talks about the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin, her role in creating the nickname Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it also talks about her battles with addiction and where she's been for the last 16 years dealing with that, her struggle, her victory over her addictions. And again, you can read more about it at Through the Shattered Glass at Amazon.com. As we wrap up here, Jeannie, real quick, where do you find yourself today? It seems like you've gone through a lot. You've had your ups and downs, but it sounds like you're in a good place.
Yeah, it's true. I had 16 years. I was in bed, and it was terrible, despairing life. And eventually, I went into rehab for 6 months. And one of the things we did in rehab was we would write down everything, our thoughts and feelings. And I wanted to make amends with my daughters for everything that went on during the addiction years. And as a therapeutic reason, I wrote the book, and really proud of it. And happily, I'm very bonded with my daughters. I never left them. When they were growing up, I got to see them grow up, and that's a miracle. And I think that the book tells of struggles with addiction, and I'm 3 years clean now, so very proud of the book, and I'm looking for a home, and I'm in a much better place.
Well, that's great. I mean, in a world where there are so many tragedies in wrestling, and many of Steve's contemporaries and people that you worked with and knew are no longer with us. I think it's a testament to you, and we're very happy to see that you didn't become one of those wrestling tragedies. We're glad to hear that you're much better now. You've got good relationships, and things are on the upswing. And that's it's always good when you can read about wrestling success stories versus yet another wrestling tragedy.
Yes, thank you.
So the book is Through the Shattered Glass. They can get it at Amazon. Is there a way, or you're autographing some books as well, is that right?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, and I have some books. I will autograph them and mail them to anybody who wants them. I don't charge any extra to autograph it. If they want it directly through me, they can contact me on Facebook. Other than that, it's on Amazon.com and amazon.co.uk, and I'm doing some conventions too, so I love to meet the fans because they're the ones that really supported me and wrote some great reviews on my book, and very, very, very grateful to the fans who who, even when I came out of rehab, it was such a low place of daunting coming out of there. And I chat to the fans. They always made me feel better. So very grateful to them.
Do you know what where you're going to be anytime soon? Are there any appearances you want to promote?
I'm actually in Philadelphia in about 10 days. On the 17th of September for Icon's show. So I have that one coming up very soon.
You can find her on Twitter at Clark Jeannie. And also you can find her again on Facebook under Jeannie Clark. If you're a friend of mine on Facebook, you can find Jeannie. She's one of my friends. I think I've tagged her in a few posts as well, so be sure to connect with her that way. And if you want an autographed copy of Through the Looking Glass, that's probably the best way to do it. Well, Jeannie, thank you so much. It was a joy to meet you this year, and hopefully we'll get to work again. I really appreciate it. And as always, if there's anything you need me for, anything I can promote or anything I can do for you, let me know.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Give my best to Cassie, and we'll have to do a road trip sometime in the States and go to some tacky tourist attractions.
Absolutely. Anytime you're in the UK, we can do the theme parks as well.
That would be fun. I'd love to go to Blackpool sometime.
Yeah, be great.
All right,
thank
the lovely
so
Jeannie
much.
Clark. My pleasure. Thank you, Jeannie. Take care, and like I mentioned, I'm off for a couple of weeks, and I'll be back on the 24th of September with Bruce Pritchard, Brother Love from the WWE. And then on the 1st, October 1st, don't miss it, Queen Kong, Matilda the Hun from the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling is going to be here. Matilda the Hun from roller derby, from acting, from GLOW, from mud wrestling. She is quite a character, and I'm very excited to have her on. So I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you to Jeannie Clark, and we'll talk to you next time here on Saturday Morning Wrestling on BW Torch Livecast. See you.